fifth time in the last six seasons, the Dutch are the champions.
This is Gary O'Neill to win it.
They've got it! Terrific header, Callum Robinson, super ball in.
Great feeling, we have to treasure these nights.
Well, hello there. Welcome along to the RT Soccer Podcast. I'm Adrian Eames, joined by Rob Wright from RT Online, James O'Toole from Soccer Republic, Mick Cook, former Ireland's women's team manager and former League of Ireland player. And our special guest this week is Gary Dempsey. So then, lads, any highlights from the weekend? Anything catch your eye? I tell you what, I'll start with the hit of the week. Although, mind you, it's hard. Is there anything that maybe... went viral. League is a bit dull at the moment. Hang on, I'll try the RT Soccer Twitter feed here now.
And now the corner can happen. It's Duffy.
Oh, what a goal! What a goal that is! That's incredible strike. Absolutely won the strike at the back post. What a finish. What a corner kick. Drilled to the back post. And a hell of a finish. The chance for goal of the season last week. But my God, what a finish. Absolutely splendid goal.
Well, Jordan Flores met that on the meat.
The technique of that is unbelievable, George. Because up over the shoulder, look, you see, he has to get his knee over the ball, keeps it down, flies past Manners. Brilliant finish. What a goal, what an equaliser. Like I said, he scored a brilliant goal last week. He's got a better one this week. That's 1-2 so far for goal of the season. But you won't go anywhere and see a better goal than that. It was a brilliant finish.
Rob Wright, how many hits on RT Online on the Twitter feed has that Jordan Flores goal got over the weekend?
It's just under 5 million, 4.9 million now, and it's rising all the time. From the moment we put that up, that was up, I'd say within 20 minutes of it being scored, and even then there were people clamouring to get that goal up straight away. FIFA had it retweeted and sent out within the hour. It's just gone huge. It's been on Sky Sports News, it's been on Match of the Day 2 last night, and yeah, people have just can't get enough of it.
James, are we in general agreement that this is the hit of the week? There's no disputing that. In the truest sense of the word hit. You're contrarian.
I'm not going to be contrarian. I am actually another hit of the week that happened at Shamrock Rovers that night is Nadine O'Neill, the ball boy.
Yeah.
Has anybody seen his touch from the cross?
Yeah, Rob was talking about it.
Pings it over and the young lad just kills it dead. Best touch of the night, has to be said. But no, 4.9 million people have viewed it on the Twitter page at the moment. That's more people than have the coronavirus.
Oh, stop. Let's not go
there. There you go.
Mick Cook, is it the greatest League of Ireland goal of all time, or is that overstating it? Because you've been around the game for a while.
No, it probably is, Adrian. Unbelievable technique. And, you know, to think that if it was a training ground move, certainly, you know, it has to be goal of the season already. I can't see another one like it.
What did you make of it, Gary?
Yeah, I agree with the lads. It was phenomenal. It looked like a set piece to me. It looked like it was set up for him to get a block and get him free at the back stick. But the whole goal, the cross, to drill it into him, and then, I mean, to get his leg up where he got his leg up and to get a strike on it. And I think even the goalkeeper getting a hand on it actually makes it a better looking goal. I think it was fantastic. It was a great strike.
It was 100% practice, because during the week they put out a tweet where Rory Higgins completes it as well in training.
So I saw that actually.
They'd gone through it in training, and even the blockers, as you said, if you look where Jordan stands for the corner, he ends up where the furthest striker is in the box to strike it, where they all go to the front post. It must be, I don't know, as a manager yourself, Mick, it must be great when something like that in the training field comes off.
Well, I think, as Gary knows as well, I think when you work with stuff, whether it be throw-ins, corners, free kicks, once it comes off you, you really feel the need then that you do have to do set pieces.
Absolutely, yeah.
And when they do come off, it's an extra plus.
Absolutely. I mean, set pieces nowadays could be the difference between you winning or losing the game. I mean, what did that make it? Would that make it 2-each?
That was... One all.
That was to make it one all. To get them back in the game, you know, and set pieces are a huge part of the game now. But as Mick says, when you practice them and they come off, you get such satisfaction from the work that you're doing on the training ground. But it looked like a set play to me, I have to say now. It really did.
And it was a smashing delivery from Michael Duffy. Rob, as a Shamrock Rovers fan, you must be absolutely cock-a-hoop with the way the whole night went. Everybody's talking about the Jordan Flores goal, but Jack Byrne's winner wasn't too shabby either.
It was great, and I mean the way they rebounded as well. Like, you know, they after that goal went in, you could see they took a blow there, and you know they were kind of holding on a bit coming into the second half, coming to the end of the first half rather. But the second half now they came back out and really took control of it again, and the way that they could just go and chase that winner. You know, there was no real doubt that they could go and win it. And it's a beautiful goal. You look at Jack Byrne, there's five defenders in front of him before he shifts the ball straight across and just curls it in. It's kind of going to get lost now, but it's a wonderful goal in itself.
Yeah, and Pat Hooban's goal was pretty decent too as well. Gary, in terms of the, I mean, it's still so early in the league campaign, of course, but for Shamrock Rovers, they needed to get a positive result, and having got all three and in the manner in which they did, it's a huge fillip for them so early in the season against their arguably their great title rivals for 2020.
Yeah, I think so. It looks like it's going to be the two of them again fighting it out. And as you said, to get the win... the way that they did, I actually thought the game was fantastic, the way the game ebbed and flowed. And you know, Rovers went ahead and then Dundalk got on top, as Rob was saying, and Rovers were hanging on a little bit, and another couple of goals. It was great, and then Jack obviously scores a cracker then as well to win it. But yeah, look, for Rovers, it just keeps momentum going. It's a wee kick in the teeth for Dundalk, but I mean, we've all seen before, Dundalk will bounce back, and they'll go and put another little run together. But look, it's very, very early, but certainly at this early point, it's looking like those are going to be the two teams that are going to be leading the way.
And Mick, again on Shamrock Rovers, the arrival of Rory Gaffney from Salford City, is that the final piece in the jigsaw for Shamrock Rovers, do you think?
I think so, Adrian. I think over the last couple of years, they haven't had an out-and-out centre-forward. And certainly with the win on Friday, I think if Dundalk had a won, people would have been saying, here we go again, Rovers' first tough game of the season, and they'd fail. But I think it's an important win, but I definitely think, you know, Gaffney will be the difference between the two teams. He will get a few goals for them. He's a big boy, done well here before he went to England. And the experience that he has gained in the last few years, I think this is the final piece of the jigsaw. You know, they're a fantastic team, fantastic squad. I think that's what will get them through this year. But I think Gaffney is the final piece.
James, from a Dundalk perspective, it's obviously a setback, but they've been down this road before, so there won't be any great panic at Oriel Park. But nonetheless, Vinnie Perth was a rather frustrated figure afterwards, and perhaps understandably so.
Yeah, you think you've got yourself back into the game, and two really, really good goals, well-worked goals as well. You think you have it, and then, of course, Byrne just puts on a little bit of extra class to the whole situation. But you look at it now, 9 points. I don't think they had 9 points at the stage last year, did they?
Yeah,
I think they started with a couple of draws. So absolutely no panic stations. I think for Rovers, Stephen Bradley mentioned after the cup final last November, the cup final was a great win, but they needed to then push this into this season. And I think this one here again is pivotal for them. I think if they had lost it, that momentum from last November may well have lost. And as far as Gary was mentioning, under the lights in Tala, 5,500 people at the game. Game was... generally these games between the two of them were kind of nip and tuck, and there isn't much between them, but it was a great, great advertisement for League of Ireland football, and long may it continue and we get some more games like that.
It was nice to see both of them have a go at each other, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Like,
yes,
you know, they didn't stand off and spar for the first half hour, and you have a look at us and we'll have a look at you. They both went at it, which was refreshing to see, actually.
Well, I think it will be, like, if they're going to play one of the four times, as you say, to start off in the first game and have such an open, good football game.
Absolutely.
Has to bring the crowds back. You know what I mean? It was a great advertisement. And when you consider the conditions as well, you know, it was absolutely fantastic. And that game, had it been on Sky, they would have been shown it time and time and time again. Not only the goals, but some of the play in the game was fantastic.
Yes, like,
it was
a top-level game. The play between was just brilliant, and the intensity throughout the entire game was great. I think, actually, when you look at Gaffney come on, it didn't look as if he had only joined up with that squad this week. Like, he looked really, really good. He put his weight around. He linked up play really, really well. He actually linked up for the goal that Byrne actually scores from, the chance that he scores from. So I think, as you said, Adrian, I think he could be the making of that Rovers team. I think for Dundalk, Flores, and we were talking before the match on Friday night, they didn't have him last season, essentially, because he was injured so much. So he is also like a new signing for Dundalk, because they have him really fit at the start of the season, and he's an option. And talking to some of the players over the months, he's really, really good at training. They're all really excited about him, just getting him fit. And that goal just shows exactly what he's capable of.
Yeah, 4 wins out of 4 for Shamrock Rovers. So they're top of the table on 12 points. Dundalk in second on 9 points. Elsewhere at the weekend, Cork City 1, Finn Harps 0, a first win of the season for Cork City under Neil Fenn. Alec Byrne with the only goal there. Derry 2-0 winners over Bohemians. Both sides, of course, expected to be in contention for European football. Stephen Mallon and Walter Figuera. We mentioned Shamrock Rovers 3-2 winners over Dundalk at Tallaght Stadium. Shells. Big, big win over their great Dublin rivals, St. Pat's. Shelburne 1, St. Pat's 0 at Tulka Park. Jay's KBA with the only goal midway through the first half. Rory Feely of Pat's sent off. James, before I get the views of James, Sligo Rovers Waterford at the Showgrounds was postponed on Saturday night ahead of that particular fixture. In fact, it was postponed on Friday. What else, apart from the game at Tallaght Stadium, James, stood out for you in the Premier Division over the weekend?
I think the Shelburne scoring from another set piece. I don't think you're actually scored from open play yet since the Premier Division started. That stands out, but the main standout and is the goal that was disallowed in Cork for Finn Harps just before half time. The pitch was absolutely abysmal. The pitch was falling apart after every minute. The weather was awful. Poor Hugh Cal was there for us and he was absolutely drowned on the side of the pitch trying to do his links. But a ball goes in, goalkeeper Bossen drops it, spills out into the muck, and Colger goes after it, but he absolutely smashes the goalkeeper, no question. Neil Doyle originally gives the goal and then consults with the linesman. The linesman rules it out and then all hell breaks loose, thinking that it's going to be a goal. And Ollie, we don't see it in the camera, but Ollie does mention it after in the interview, that the linesman actually left. I'm sure Mick, as a again manager, this will do your head in. The linesman leaves the position and runs to the halfway line as if it's a goal and then goes back and tells the referee to disallow the goal. And Ollie's saying that he, because he's in front of the Cork bench has had a word with the linesman. He says, now, in fairness, if it was in front of the Harps bench and it was a Harps thing, he would have done the same. But I think that stands out. I think straight off I felt it wasn't a goal and it was the right way, but it took about 5 or 6 minutes. It was almost as if we were waiting on VAR or something like that. It took so long. But yeah, that was the standout moment of that game in particular. And thankfully, Neil Fenn goes on and gets his first win off the back of it.
Okay. We've got a quiz question for you lads. You ready for this? And it's a broad European one, but we'll see what you can make of it. We've obviously been talking about the Jordan Flores goal, candidate for the Puskas Award, and you'll all recall the legendary Hungarian footballer Ferenc Puskas. But which team did he manage in a European Cup final? Ferenc Puskas, and it was in the early 70s. Go on there, Mick.
Come on, mate.
European Cup final.
European Cup final.
Red Star.
It is a tricky enough one. I have to.
So it's not one of the big guns then.
No, not. It's not a Real Madrid or a Bayern Munich.
Right. Go on, give us the country. Give us the country.
Well, if I give you the country, I'll probably give you the answer.
Steaua Bucharest.
Good shout, but not the correct answer.
Okay. Oh, it was a very good further shout. South than that. As in geography.
I'm just going to the country.
Is it Greece?
Yes.
Panathinaikos?
Give that man a cigar. Well done. Panathinaikos in 1971. Very good. Well done. And thanks to James McMahon from RTÉ Online for that particular question. Another next week. Now, in the first division, Athlone Town 1, Cabinteely 3. Very good win for Cabinteely, 2 wins out of 2 for them. Bray Wanderers 2-0 winners over Wexford. Gary Shaw and Andrew Mourne. And James, Andrew Mourne, just 16 years of age, 4 months and 13 days on Friday, a night he'll never forget, scoring for Bray a 2-0 victory.
Yeah, makes him the youngest ever goal scorer for the club, I believe. Yeah, I think that's what it made him. And it's great, like, Bray needed to get a win in that game, in fairness. I know the league's only just started for them, but a good win in that game. Wexford getting a couple of goals. I know a couple of other results around, like the Shamrock Rovers one in particular. I did see a tweet from the Galway team thanking the staff and the emergency staff there as well for helping their players after the match, because it was so cold and so wintry during the game. They all come off practically with frostbite. That's almost an hypothermia.
I think one of the players actually come off with it.
One of the players was taken to hospital.
Yeah,
what is the point in playing a game in conditions like that?
Yeah, I don't understand it. I know Johnny Ward was at the match and he said it was the coldest match he's ever been at, sitting in the stands, all wrapped up at. But then you hear this after the match as well. Like, it has to. Someone has to make a decision on whether it's good enough to play on. And I don't know who does that. Does the ref do it?
That's also your miss of the week, Rob, isn't it?
It is.
That situation that unfolded.
Yeah, Galway manager Alan Murphy was saying that two of his players actually had hypothermia. The Rovers coach afterwards said the dressing room was like a scene from World War II afterwards. It was a ridiculous decision to play it on, and I think it's an inexperienced referee that's getting the blame at the moment, but it was in the middle of a storm that had an orange category warning throughout the country, so probably not the best conditions for a game of ball.
Especially when you consider the Sligo game was called off so early. I know they were in close to the red zone for the storm, but that was called off 5 o'clock on Friday. For it to go ahead, as you said, I can only imagine, like, some of these were only young fellas, early 19s and stuff like that. So
what is the protocols for? Is it status red, everything's, it's a blanket call off, yeah?
Yeah, if
it's, and yellow, if it, then it's on the night, is it?
Or yeah, well, it's up to, I think, it, I don't know if it's up to the referee or if it's up to
staff at the stadium or whatever.
Yeah, it has the safety as well.
I think the referee has the final call.
Is there a higher order where the referee rings someone within the FBI and says, or if there's an official there, a match official maybe, gets to give the decision?
See, like, you're going to have teams, as myself and Mick would know, you're going to have teams travelling, and if he makes a call, I don't know, an hour and a half before a game, and a team has travelled, there'll be murders, you know. I suppose as much as they're giving out, they're going to have to do, they're just going to have to take it on the chin. But if it's the right call, I'm sure more managers than not would agree with it if it is the right call.
I think the majority of the time, like, managers want to play games.
Yeah.
But, like, the majority of the time, you do agree with the official.
It has to be sensible.
It has to be acceptable. You know, on health and safety grounds alone, as you say, here's players taken to hospital after the game of frostbite.
Yeah. I think, and is that bringing another one? Were they not running enough?
imagine being a sub.
Yeah.
Seriously, trying to warm up and come in and play the last half hour of that game. Sure, you'd never.
Never get going.
You'd never get going.
I think, in fairness to the referee, though, lads, at lunchtime, say around about 1 o'clock on Saturday, it was a perfectly fine day. It's just a case of the conditions and the weather deteriorated quite rapidly. But anyway, listen, we move on. 1-1 is how it finished there at Tallaght Stadium. UCD 1-0 winners over Cove Rangers. Yusuf Madi amongst the goals once again. And Longford going very well. Like Cabinteely, it's 2 wins out of 2 for Longford. They were 1-0 winners over Drogheda United. Sam Verdon with the only goal at United Park. Brandon Birmingham red carded for Drogheda. So early stages in the first division, Cabinteely and Longford Town both on 6 points, UCD on 4, and then it's Drogheda on 3 alongside Bray Wanderers. Those are the results, and that's the table from the first division. Now, it's good to have Gary Dempsey in studio with us, because Gary, you made the news quite recently, and you're very much involved and you're very much aware of mental health and mental well-being, and you of course used to play for Dunfermline, and you got a notification via Twitter from a dad who was concerned about his son Ollie. Can you just explain the background to what happened?
I've been very active on social media in the last little while regarding mental health, and trying to just use the platform that I have to get men in particular to talk, men that are struggling, and you know, trying to get them to talk, to see that there is a way out and there is help, and you know, but you gotta speak up first. So Ollie's dad was following me on Twitter and had seen a few of these videos, and he sent me he took a picture of the letter that Ollie had wrote. His mum had put him to bed, basically what had happened, and she could hear him, he wasn't settling, and he came down the stairs and he handed her this note that he had wrote when he was upstairs, saying that along the lines of, I hate myself, I'm a fat idiot, I'm rubbish at football. So Karen, his mum, sat him down and said, well, hang on, you know, where's this come from? And it turns out he was getting a hard time at school. So his dad took a screenshot of it, tagged me in it on Twitter, and just asked me would I do just a little 30-second video to Ollie, saying, you know, keep practicing, wee man, stick in with it, you'll be fine, that sort of thing. But I just felt that the thoughts of an 8-year-old, like, I've got kids, like my lad is 12 and my daughter's 10, and to think that an 8-year-old who is football daft, which he is, was going to stop playing football because he was getting a hard time in school. So I was like, right, okay, so let's do the video. So I'd done the video anyway, and I told him I was going to send him over my jersey that I scored against Celtic with, but I'd also private mailed his dad and said, send me on your phone number so I can FaceTime him. So I got on FaceTime with him, and we were having the laugh and the crack and the joke on the phone call, and then privately I'd said to his dad, look, there's a game on Tuesday, I'm going to come over, let's organise, I'll pick him up from school, we'll put on a coaching session with some other kids, we'll put a call out to on social media to all these other kids, and let's make a fuss of him. And it sort of went from there, really, when my video went back to him. And I know I got onto Stevie Crawford, who I played with at Dunfermline, who's the manager, and he'd done a video message for him. I got onto Hunty, who's one of my best pals, and he'd done a video, and a couple of the other lads that I played with. So it just sort of grew from there, getting more tweets and likes, and obviously went quite viral at the time. And then I spoke to the club as well about organising something for him at the game, and I just went from there, to be honest. And then it was just a case of getting over and collecting them. I collected them from school. He got a surprise at the school, and we had a guy from Glasgow, a big Rangers fan actually, who picked us up and chauffeured us around for the day. He offered to chauffeur us around for the day. He had a chauffeur and limo service that he ran. So we got chauffeured around in this big fancy Mercedes. So he got an unbelievable day. But yeah, to think it was heartbreaking stuff. When I saw the letter on Twitter, it was like, a video message is not gonna fix this. We need to get over and see him and make him, let him know that he's special and he's unique, and to stick in with the football and stuff like that. And we had Sky Sports follow us, BBC Scotland and stuff like that. So it was great day all around, and a happy ending, thank God.
Gary, do you mind if I just read out the letter just to give for the benefit of listeners? Yeah. This is what Ollie wrote, and Ollie's just 8 years of age. Dear Mum, all I am is a stupid, big, fat idiot. I am terrible at football. I hate myself. Love you always, Ollie. Loads of kisses. Still not sleepy. How's he now, Gary?
He's great. He's absolutely great. So he had a fantastic day. We had great fun. We, as I say, we collected him from school. We went back to his house and we sat down, and he had a couple of mates from school come home with him, and we had a bit of fun. I brought my young lad over, brought Jack over with me as well. So we had a bit of fun in the house, had a bite to eat, and then we went off to the coaching session. I think we had about 30 kids turn up. We'd done a little fun session with them, and then I sat down and had a chat with them for sort of 5 minutes at the end about bullying and how it's not nice and it's nice to be nice and stuff like that. So the whole thing was a success. I'm still getting videos off him every couple of days of him out practicing and stuff like that. I told him I wanted to see videos at least once a week of him out practicing, and we're still in touch. So he's getting on great, thank God. So there is a happy ending to it, but it's not nice. It's not nice, and I think it's going on more than we realise. So for me to give up a couple of days of my time to go over and see him wasn't a big issue to when we see an end result like that, you know.
And where has your interest in mental well-being and mental health come from? Because you're an ambassador for the Back Onside charity as well. You've been posting videos on Twitter promoting mental health awareness. So where does that stem from, your involvement and your interest in this area?
Well, I run my own fitness business now at the moment. So I've got my own gym in Wicklow Town where we do like classes, and we've got a gym and stuff like that. So I'm dealing with a lot of people, clients that I train and clients that come in and train in the gym. So they, with me being their trainer, they obviously confide in me, and there's so many people struggling, it's frightening. And then I'm managing North End United down in Wexford, and our chairman at 41 years of age, about 10 weeks ago, took his own life at 41 years of age with 5 kids. And we were at the funeral, and his daughter, who was 17, sort of said in the church, you know, that she was nearly given out to her dad. Her dad was in the coffin in front of her, and she was sort of saying, why didn't you say something? Why didn't you ask for help? You didn't have to suffer in silence. And when we were in the graveyard, I went to see my mum's grave, and I actually can't even remember shooting the video in the graveyard. It was just like a surreal moment. So I took out my phone and I started shooting a video, saying, you know, please speak up, there is help, you know, just the general, you know, we've just buried a friend of ours here, his daughter, you know, the devastation that they leave behind, you know, and just general, get the message across that if you are rock bottom, there is hope, there is always hope, there's always help, but you have to speak up. And it just went from there. I've had players, former players that I've played with, private mail me and said that the videos, one guy said he was in tears, and he actually went and spoke to his mum that day. And he's now on the mend, thank God. And I've had a few others. So a lot of the guys that touched base with me were from Scotland. We had a few from Ireland, but there was a lot of guys that private mailed me from Scotland saying that they were in a really, really bad place. And then that's how the charity Back On Side then came on board. I know some of the footballers are involved with that charity. So I managed to get them in touch with the guys that were struggling, and they're doing fantastic work with them over there now. But unfortunately, they're only a charity, so it's fundraising after fundraising after fundraising to try and get. But guys, you've no idea the amount of people that are in trouble at the minute with their mental health. It's a scary, scary world out there at the minute.
And as you said, like it's all about speaking up, and it's all about, I suppose, being honest with yourself, like and trusting people around you. Like, for instance, Ollie, for instance, will say, yeah, he obviously, his mom and dad have obviously nurtured him very, very well, that he felt he could actually write that down and bring it to them.
Yeah.
For him, as a young lad, as you said, 8 years of age, to write that down and bring it to his mom and dad and go, here we are.
Yeah.
It's something we could all learn from. Like, no matter what age you are, this is an 8-year-old showing us the way.
Absolutely.
If you're not feeling it, as the hashtag is, if it's okay not to be okay.
Yeah. I think there's a stigma. The problem is with men now in particular, it's people feel it's a sign of weakness when you're asking for help. But it's actually not. It's the other way. I think it's incredibly brave. And the way I look at it is, if you're rock bottom, what have you got to lose? You know, what have you got to lose by saying to mum or dad, husband or wife or friend, whatever it is? And even if it has to be a letter or a phone call or a text, just say, look it, I'm struggling at the moment. You know, and I've had loads of people message me that. And like, I'm not a qualified psychologist or psychiatrist or something like that, but I can put them in touch with the right people. And, you know, I can keep talking to them and stuff like that. And look, the way I look at it with my videos on social media and what I'm doing now, If I help or if I save, and I know for a fact we've already saved potentially 3 or 4 people that were borderline ready to go and do that terrible act, it's job done. And again, for the sake of posting a 60-second video about being positive and getting control of your mind, because your mind is where it's at. But like you say, you need to, like, sometimes you can't see it. You look at, you know, Caroline Flack, the poor girl, Robin Williams, all these so-called superstars who have everything and look like life's rosy, they've got all the money in the world, yada yada yada, and you don't see it. It's really scary if they don't speak up. So my message all the time on social media is for guys and girls, but more so for the guys, because we're just losing too many lives, losing too many good men and young men with families and stuff, you know. So
I just think the expectation in life now is far too big. And yeah, people want all the time, and they probably feel if they don't achieve their goals, whether it's in the sporting world or the business world, that they feel ashamed.
Yeah.
And they must go into that terrible bubble.
Yeah.
You
see, you've got, there's so many, like the guys that have been in touch with me, there's relationship trouble, there's financial trouble, there's, you know, just feel lost their job, and you know, like there's just so many things, and then it spirals, it just keeps going and keeps going. And then where must your mind be to get to a situation where you think the best way out here is to take my own life? Do you know? And when people get to that point, sometimes it's very hard to get them out of it. So we need to try and get them before they're gone too far. And as I say, all it is, honest to God, is a phone call or a text to somebody, like you said, someone that you trust. And there's no one going to ignore that phone call or that text. And you know, I heard a great saying, I'd rather sit down and have a chat with you than go to your funeral. You know, I'd rather hear about your hard times, you know, and try and help you than having to go and
Also think, Gary, like, that people have to be aware as well, and don't be afraid to approach people. If you feel like a friend or someone says something about somebody, don't be afraid to go to them and say,
yeah,
are you all right? Or
yeah,
is there anything I can do for you? I don't think you're
don't
the same
yourself.
You.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, it's a responsibility both ways. I mean, I'd often feel, say, and you know the football, you know, say fellas coming near the end of their career, mm-hmm, drop down the leagues maybe.
Yeah.
I'd always say to lads that I wouldn't sign back or whatever. Like, this is nothing personal, or you're just not going to fit in. You have to talk to people as well.
Yeah.
To make sure that they don't dip.
Yeah, absolutely.
And try to help them. You know?
You made a great point there, Mick, as well. It's not only the people that are suffering, maybe asking for help, and you can maybe say to people, you know, are you okay? you know, if you have a doubt about anybody at all, again, the cost, it's a text message, it's a phone call. Are you okay? Do you need to chat? Right, listen, we're going to go for a cup of coffee tomorrow. And, you know, they might just open up to you. But, you know, if you, as Mick says, if you see the signs, just make the call. Send the text, because genuinely, you could save somebody's life. It's really that important.
I'm going to be an open book here. I was one of those people many, many years ago.
Fair play,
it was, one of my classmates had passed away
right.
while I was away doing a, I was away representing Ireland on a soccer game, and it was her death, and the teacher noticed it and said it to me, are you okay? And I went, no,
yeah,
I'm not.
Yeah.
And it was one of the teachers in the school noticed it. And
yeah. How old were you then?
I was 18.
Yeah.
18 years of age, just about to do my Leaving Cert.
A lot
the person
going on.
Was yeah. in all, and in fairness to the person who we're talking about, we won't mention the person, but very, very good academic, well ahead of class, looked happy as everything was in perfect order. And then on the Friday evening as I left, I said goodbye, see you on Monday morning, and never saw her again.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where you do have to, and people can see it, and people shouldn't be afraid to go up to someone and say, are you okay? As
yeah,
you said,
absolutely.
It's not just up to the other person. But if you're at that ebb, as you said, the easiest thing to do is go, I need help.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
There are resources out there, as you say, through your Twitter account and through different, like, Aware is there as well. There's other organisations out there that can help, and people
yeah.
need to go and look for help on this situation.
Isn't the issue sometimes that people are very wary to intervene in that kind of situation? A, because they're afraid they're doing the wrong thing by asking the wrong question, and they're just not sure. And then before you know it, there's a danger that it could be too late. So in other words, what you're effectively saying is, if you have an inkling at all that something might be wrong, just go ahead
ask
and ask
the question.
Nothing to lose.
Yeah, 100%. Ask the question. You know, if everything's fine, they'll tell you everything's fine. But if you have an inkling, just ask them and make sure. Because how many times during the day do you meet people? Like, I've done it coming into RT buildings today. How's things? Grand. That's the general answer you get. How are things going? Yeah, yeah, all's good. But you know, when you actually
how do you probe
well,
deeper?
Yeah,
you
drive at them, because eventually I'll tell you a story, right? My brother won't thank me for this. I was teaching a class in my gym, and my phone beeped, and it was my brother Robin. Robin, you know, did you ever see Robin play? No. So Robin had a 5-year contract at Aston Villa. He went over when he was 16. They loved him, absolutely loved him. Played with Ireland all the way up with Niall Harrison and John Morley and all that. But never settled. Homesick, never settled. But anyway, he came home. And he ended up working. So he was working in Dunn Stores, and he started work at 11 o'clock in the morning and didn't finish until 8 or 9 at night. So he couldn't train with North End. So his everything that has been everything to him in his life at the minute was taken away from him. And I was teaching this class, and my phone binged, and it was Robin. And the first 3 or 4 words, my heart dropped. He said, I've had enough. And I was like, oh my God, I don't want to open this message. So I opened it. Again, I feel the message was like, I feel better if I'm gone. I wouldn't be a strain on anybody, yada yada yada. So basically he was talking about killing himself that day, and I was like, right, my other instructor was in the gym. I was like, listen, you need to go in and finish that class for me. So I rang Robin. I said, where are you? He said, I'm in my bedroom. I said, who's with you? And his son was with him. So I was like, right, his son is there. So you know, you'd like to think that he's not going to do anything stupid while his child is there. So I said, don't move. I'll be there it's 45 minutes from my house in Wicklow to Wexford. So went straight down, got him in the car. He got in the car beside me and he just broke down, just literally crumbled right in front of me. And I said, bud, right, come on, it's okay. And we went to a pub and I was just chatting to him. So, you know, how are you? What is it? And between the jigs and the reels over the next couple of days. So basically what I done with him, I said, right, we're going to go home, pack a bag, you're coming with me for a couple of weeks. If you want to bring the young lad away as well, bring him away. So he came up to my house for a couple of weeks and I got him in the gym, and I sort of left him alone for a couple of days. I didn't want to go too heavy too quick because he's obviously after unleashing. But you could, as soon as we came back after having a cup of tea and a bite to eat, to get his gear back, it was like the world had lifted off his shoulder, because he had said how he was feeling and where he was at mentally. So we got him back to the house. So between the jigs and the reels, the common denominator was work. He hated his job, absolutely hated his job, because he couldn't play football. He was working Sundays, so he couldn't play ball with us on a Sunday. So I rang Dunn straight away and said, look, Robin's done, he won't be back. Had a bit of a ding dong with them, you know, oh, we need it in writing, yada yada yada. So anyway, that was the end of that. So he quit his job. He stayed with me for 2 weeks. And when I say he's a new, like, it's like a new man. So I'm managing him. So he's training with me. So training is great. He loves to train. I'm looking after him in the team and stuff like that. And he now has aspirations. He's only 23. So he now has aspirations to go back and play in England. But he was potentially, if he didn't have his young lad with him, he was probably 10, 15 minutes from maybe trying to kill himself in the house. And, you know, between that and our chairman committing suicide, there was a gap of about 2 months. And that was like where I was like, right, okay, Gary, I actually think I'm quite good at talking. I think I've got the gift of the gab, and I can, when people talk to me, not that I can relate because I've never been there myself, but I'm a good listener. I can generally, I'm a good talker with people. So, do you know, when it's that close to home, you're like, right, I've got a bit of a platform because obviously being an ex-pro, if I can help in any way possible by putting out videos, by putting out links to PA the House or Back On Side or whoever it is that are going to help these people, and if people can see, right, there's Gary Dempsey who played in England, played in Scotland, played I don't know how many senior games, ex-professional footballer, if he can say, ask for help, well, I can certainly send a text to somebody and say, look, I'm in a bad place. And sort of that's where it's come from. And the plan now is to try to get into schools if I can, and speak to kids about mental health and bullying, and try to get into some businesses as well around the place and try and...
I think, Gary, as well, in every sport, whether it be soccer, Gaelic, rugby, this thing of elitism,
yeah,
to me is very
horrendous.
Dangerous.
And yeah,
to think... You've under 13s now, 14s, and as you say, if one lad at 14 years of age is discarded, like, who talks to him?
Yeah, that.
Like, you're only a number. Good luck, we don't want you. Or say your brother coming home, feeling his life is crashed because love is taken away from him.
Yeah.
But like, I just think this elitism is far too young for pressure to be under 13s, under 15. You're old enough at 16 and 17 to step into the real world of sport. And the pressure on people to win matches, you know, to perform as a 12 and 13 year old, I think is far too much in every sport.
We had a close association with a football club for many, many years, and it was the whole idea of the football club being set up was that every single young lad, young girl around the area can play football. And a couple of years ago, they started doing trials. And as soon as that happened, I went, no, sorry, I have to step away from this. That's not what the club was set up for. Same as you're saying, the elitism of this kind of stuff. Everybody should be able to go along on a Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday or Sunday and kick a ball
100%.
Or throw a disc or run 100 metres or swim 50 metres or dive off a board or do gymnastics. Yeah. No matter what level they're at, if they enjoy it, they should be let do it. And as you said, the elitism part of it, it will naturally come as you go up and as you get better and stuff like that. But telling people you need to achieve this, and in fairness, Gary's using it well, social media can be the worst thing in the world.
Yep.
But Gary is using it well for this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's what people look at. People look at social media and they look at different people and they look, oh, I'm not doing that, I'm not doing that.
Or I think ring fencing children at 14, 34. No, you're going to be a rugby player. You're going to be a hurler. Like yourself, Gary, I've spoken to parents about their children. And there was one lad, he was playing out County Dublin, maybe into Kildare. And he was the star. He was getting trials here, trials there. And his father brought him into a team in the centre of town. And I remember the father was a countryman. I said, I'm telling you, your boy is not ready to go into the heart of Dublin. It's a different life in there.
Yeah.
And I'd say within 3 years, this lad had been underage international. Mm. And within 3 years, he packed up football.
Yeah.
You know, because he went into a completely different, out of his own little area where he was, into the rough and tumble of the inner city. And it's a different life in there. And like, people wanting to, oh no, you have to do this, you have to do that. I speak to parents saying, if they want to play Gaelic tomorrow, soccer the next day, wherever, let them do it.
Exactly.
And they come in time at 17 years of age, say, right, it's either this sport for me or that. And then let them go off and pursue their dream at whatever sport. But just ring fencing them, to me, is, it's like ring fencing players to tell them where you're playing. You're a fullback, you're a goalkeeper. You know, if you're 6 foot, you're a goalkeeper. If you're small, you're a winger.
So we should be doing all we can to encourage our kids, because I mean, like, technology now is also a big part of it. When we should be encouraging kids, like you're talking about trials, I've seen clubs have open trials for under eights. Like, it's bonkers. Yeah. Like, now you can have, if the big clubs, the big schoolboys want to have, you know, the best under 12s, under 30, that's fine, no problem. But you've got to be providing for the other lads that are just out for a game of ball, because, I mean, I would say easy 60% of my clients in my gym come to train for headspace. Genuinely, come to train because they're under pressure in work, they're under pressure at home, kids are driving them mad, husband's driving them mad, whatever, honestly. And they just need that hour for them. And like, you cannot put a price, like, you cannot put a price on that. What that 3 hours a week, those are my 3 hours, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, I'm going to spin and I'm doing whatever I'm going to do, because I just need that headspace to go and be on my own, or be with like minded people. But even in my gym, we have so many people struggling mentally. It's scary, but we've got things in place to try and help them and kick them along, you know.
Well, it's a very important conversation, and it's great that we've had it on the podcast, because we did touch on it last week with Alan Cawley during the course of a conversation with Giorgio Callan about bullying in England. So it's right throughout all strands of society. And I guess, just to repeat what you said, and sometimes it's easier said than done, but just chat to somebody, just reach out if you feel you need to, or if you think somebody is maybe feeling the effects of what you just said, then talk. That's it's all about talking, isn't it, ultimately? You were back in Dunfermline, of course, to see young Ollie, and it was the first time in what, over a decade, that you were back there. Is that right?
Yeah.
What was it like going back to Dunfermline, and what are your memories of your time there?
Dunfermline was awesome. I went back to Dunfermline after I came back after Everton. I came back to Bray and I couldn't get in the team. Devo wouldn't put me in the team because he had Gormley and Tresson and Keith Long and all them boys, so I couldn't get in the team. So I went down on loan to Waterford, and how it came about, I got my under 21 cap when I was at Waterford, and Don Givens was great pals with Jimmy Calderwood, who was the Dunfermline manager, and that's sort of where the connection came about, and I went over. Loved it. Dunfermline was brilliant. I mean, we were playing against Celtic and Rangers every other week, and that was the proper, I mean, we were, when we played Celtic in the cup final, you had Hearts and Larson, Sutton, Petrov, Paul Lambert, big Bobo Balde, Didier Gat, you know, proper teams. And we played Rangers in the quarter final or whatever it was. You were looking at, again, Mikel Arteta, Barry Ferguson, Amoruso, Michael Moulds, De Boer, you know, there were proper teams then. So Dunfermline was awesome, really, really good, great club, great community club, and I had good times there. We finished third, I think. Got into Europe because of the cup final, that we finished fourth and had a decent run in Europe, scored a few goals in Europe and stuff, and then obviously went from there, followed Jimmy C and Jimmy Nick up to Aberdeen, which was also fantastic.
And was the Dunfermline days the highlights of your career, or, I mean, because you also played, of course, for several clubs here, but if you had to pick out a period in your career, what would it be?
I don't really know, to be honest. I've enjoyed it all. I enjoyed it all because I was doing what I loved. I was playing soccer, and that's always what I wanted to be from when I was a kid. I remember telling the teachers in school that I was going to be a footballer, and they were like, yeah, and you know, now they've got my Ireland jersey in the hall in the school. So, do you know, it would be unfair to say I enjoyed my time at all the clubs. If I had one thing that I might have done different, I might have not left Aberdeen to go to Yeovil. I had a contract extension offer at Aberdeen. I was out of contract, but I had done 5 years in the SPL, and in the SPL it's a bit like the League of Ireland now, you play everybody 3 or 4 times, and we ended up playing, I think it was Hibs, we played them in the league 1 week, the Scottish, we played them 3 weeks in a row, and I was like, nah. And Yeovil Town looked like they were going to get promoted to the Championship, but even League One was a decent league, so I was like, right, come on, we fancy a wee change. And I went down to Yeovil. Yeovil was good. I broke my foot in pre-season, which set me back, but when I got back going again, I enjoyed Yeovil, and then obviously Brian Kerr got in touch then about coming back to Pat, so decided with Louise, who had just had Jack and Yeovil in the December, that we would come home, you know. But no, there's no particular part of Everton, probably, being honest. Right. Going over to Everton as a 16-year-old, going into a big Premier League club like that and spending 4.5-5 years there, was really, really good. But no, I loved loved all my football. Bray, Waterford, Darlington, even Steve Staunton bringing me over to Darlington for 6 months. It was good, and I enjoyed it. It was great times.
Mick, it's a big week, of course, for the women's national team. You previously managed the Irish women's national team. They've got Greece on Thursday, followed by Montenegro next week, on Wednesday of next week. The game in Tala on Thursday, it looks like it's going to be a big, big crowd. Over 5,000 tickets sold already, and it's going to be live on RT2 television, as indeed is the match against Montenegro. So it's an important period in terms of the group, because Greece are very much in contention with the Republic of Ireland, Germany, the runaway leaders of the group, but Ireland currently in second on 7 points, Greece on 4 points. And we drew with the Greeks, the Irish ladies, back in November of last year. So it's an important game, and if they can win it, they can really push on, can't they?
Well, certainly. I think dropping the 2 points to Greece in the away fixture was a bit of a setback for them. But I think they have the ability to win these two games. Obviously, you take the Greece game first, and I thought the performance out there got a bit lacklustre as the game went on, and I feared for them. I don't know, they seemed to lose their way in the game a bit, and they let Greece come into it. But certainly, to drop the 2 points, they really need to get the 3 points at home and then worry about Montenegro next week. It's vital that we do, you know. There's a lot of effort that's gone into the women's game in the last few years, and certainly the amount of money that's been put into it as regards training camps and all this. We need to qualify for a tournament sooner rather than later for the game to move on here as a whole.
Yeah, and there are some very good players in the Irish ranks. Rhianna Jarrett, of course, has made the move across the water, scored a couple of goals on her debut. And am I right in thinking, Gary, that you have a connection with Rhianna?
Yeah. She's a cousin of some sort, I think.
Yeah.
She's a cousin of some sort. So let me see if I can do this.
Well, can I tell you a very quick story?
Yeah, go for it.
I was down in Wexford last week, and we were out shopping, as you do, and there's a place in Wexford town called the Bull Market. Is that right?
Yes, yeah. The Bull Ring,
The Bull Ring. And there was a lady selling bags and what have you. And she was either married to a Dempsey, or she's a Dempsey.
She's a Dempsey, yeah.
You know who I'm talking about. Yeah. We did buy a bag, and she's involved with Wexford Youth, and her daughter is 16, she's been invited in to play for Wexford Youth, and she mentioned you.
Yes.
And then in the conversation, I said to her how her daughter could be the next Rhianna Jarrett, and she said, well, we're actually related to Rhianna Jarrett. And then she mentioned, was it Tom Dempsey or Mick Dempsey? There was a whole cluster of names. Anyway, your name was definitely mentioned, because I went, oh yeah, Gary Dempsey. Oh,
yeah. So
go on. Ireland's a small place.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I hope it was a nice handbag you got, was it?
Nice one, Gary. Yeah,
don't come looking for me for a refund now. But Rhianna, right? Okay, so Robin's dad is Rhianna's dad's brother. So Robin and Rhianna are cousins. So I'm technically a cousin somewhere along the line there, aren't I, Mick? Somewhere in some strange way.
I'm trying to draw this tree mentally.
So Robin's dad and Rhianna's dad are brothers. Yeah?
Okay.
That's it.
There we are.
They're cousins. So my brother Robin. So me and Robin haven't got the same dad. So Robin's dad is a Jamaican guy, and his brother is Rhianna's dad. So yeah, Robin and Rhianna are cousins, and I'm somewhere there.
I'm sorry I started this.
So what we're understanding is the goal scoring end went that side.
Yeah. So she's related to me anyway. That's the main thing. She's doing great.
Comes to free tickets, she's related.
But she's done great, hasn't she?
Absolutely.
What a superstar. Yeah, coming back from, is it two cruciates, two
ACLs she's had. So it's amazing. We've seen her in the cup final last year. She stood out above absolutely every player on the pitch, and it's great for her, but it's almost a shame for the league that we're losing that type of quality playing in the league here.
Yeah,
it's obviously great for the league that we're producing players like that. And I think, was Rhianna attached to IT Sligo or IT Carlow, was she at some stage?
Yeah, she's done a bit down there.
So it's as you mentioned earlier about the DCU link up, IT Carlo have the same, Athlone have the same, and we're producing players through that as well. But yeah, 2 goals in it on our full debut for Brighton.
You want to see the work that Rihanna does away from training. In terms of the gym stuff and nutrition and stuff, she's on the ball big time. Yeah, she's class, man. Because she used to be, she'd probably give out to me now for saying this, but she used to be a little bit chunky, but now she's like proper, proper lean, and she's really got stuck into, I can't remember who she said she had looking after with the gym program, but she's got her gym stuff and her nutrition stuff on point, and, you know, the proof's in the pudding. Now she's flying it.
Yeah, okay. The universities had a meeting with the FAI. And I think they're being encouraged now to give more girls scholarships to keep them at home.
Yeah.
To stop them going away, to stop them going to America. And certainly, I'm only involved with DCU now in a short while. But my God, there's some fantastic players out there. Absolutely fantastic players. Maynooth have an exceptional side.
Yeah.
You know, there's great players out there. So really, you know, I know this week we've brought in a few players with their grandparents. So there's a few granny girls coming into the team. So, you know, I just think that people have to start getting out and seeing what we have here first, because I know when I was in charge, I used to bring teams all around the country and sort of unearthed the Dolores Deasley ended up in America, a lot of players ended up at Arsenal when I was in charge, you know, from all over the country. And I used to get fellas that I'd ring in Kerry or Westport or wherever, say, have you any good Gaelic players that want to play soccer? You know, and the difference with the Gaels that play Gaelic, they're ready to rock. You know, like there again, girls playing different sports, and then obviously when you give them the opportunity to play for their country, it's an easy call that they play soccer.
I suppose with Vera as well coming into this game, you've Rihanna on a good vein of good playing at the minute, scoring goals and stuff like that, and then you got the Louise Quinn and Katie McCabe and that in the cup final on Saturday. Unfortunately, they lose that, of course, but that kind of thing, when you see where our players are now, they're at top clubs and they're playing excellent football.
With Rihanna, though, there's no scholarship in the world would have stopped Rihanna going to the UK. She had her heart set on UK or America, so she quite fancy, you know.
Okay.
They're full-time, aren't they? Brighton women, she's full-time.
They're all full-time.
Mean, she's living out her dream as well, and good luck to her.
Absolutely, good luck to her, and good luck to the women's team on Thursday against Greece at Tallaght Stadium. That game, 7:15 kickoff. Get along if you can. If not, it's live on RT2 television, as indeed is next week's game against Montenegro. Very briefly, James, before we wrap things up, because we did get Rob's miss of the week, which was the hypothermia incurred by several players at Tallaght Stadium on Saturday afternoon. But your miss or your low light at the weekend?
I have none.
Well, I have shock an extra horror one for you if you need
shock
it.
Horror. No, I just want to bask in the glory that was this weekend of League of One football. Okay. It's all I want to do.
This is Tallaght-centric as well now, and it's Alan Cawley telling tales actually. So on
There's
Twitter, he exclusively revealed that Mick McCarthy missed the winner. He left ten minutes before the end.
That's right.
Didn't see the winning goal go in.
Well, the rumour was circulating in the press box on Friday night that Mick had just left just moments before Jack Byrne's goal. There you go. But Stephen Kenny apparently was still there at the time, so I'm sure he let Mick know.
It's a good sign though that, you know, people are leaving early to beat the traffic.
Well, that's true. That's the other side of it. Lads, listen, many thanks. In particular, many thanks to Gary Dempsey. And Gary, you brought up so many very, very important issues today, and it is worth mentioning some important phone numbers if people are affected in any way by what we discussed here this evening on the podcast. Pieta House, you can free phone the number, which is 1800 247 247, and also the Jigsaw Youth Mental Health Service for 12 to 25 year olds. It strikes me that I don't know where you see your future lying, Gary. I mean, you've obviously mentioned that you got the gym, you're involved with North End United, but this seems to be a particular vocation, mental well-being amongst not just people involved in sport, but amongst the broad public. Is it something you'd like to pursue, or is it just something as a sideline?
Yeah, no, it's where I'm heading now, big time, to be honest with you. The gym is up and running, and it can look after itself. Although I'll be always there to pop in and out, but yeah, no. I'm a firm believer that the video that I shot in the graveyard at Shane's funeral was a sign from somebody, whether it was my mother saying, right, listen, this is your job for the next wee while, whatever it may be, that that this is what I'm meant to do at the minute. So I'm putting a lot of focus and a lot of effort into getting some presentations together and stuff, and trying to get into some schools and businesses and some corporate stuff, and making sure, because it's not, it's 100% not just the sport people, it's your everyday guys and guys and girls that are struggling at the minute. So if I can get in around and speak to as many people as I can, obviously my social media is not going to stop, I'm going to keep going with that, but sort of once I get everything together to try get into some schools and stuff, because I think it's important to try and get, while you don't have to go too deep with it with them in school, I think it is important to start getting the message across as early as possible, because obviously the online stuff that's going on now as well, so just to make the younger generation a little bit wiser, because obviously, you know, this is what we're going to leave the kids and the grandkids. You know, we need to try and make sure we're leaving them in the best place possible. So,
well, I also think, Gary, that there should be a huge uptake by the government to 100%, get sports stars to go into schools, rugby players, hurling players, soccer players, people that these children will be looking up to
yeah.
And as a name, and just speak to them. You know, as you say, they need talk, they need a direction in their mm-hmm. life, and that mm-hmm. when they don't succeed, it's not the end of the world. You know, and too many children, as you say, just drop off. And
yeah, they get a bit demoralised when things doesn't happen for them.
Yeah.
And then, you know, why wasn't I good enough and what happened? And, yeah, they can just get caught up in it a little bit, you know. So I think it's an important one, one that I'm going to pursue. So I'll give it a good bash anyway and see how we get on with it.
Sound advice. Fair play. That's Gary Dempsey. Also, Mick Hook. Thanks as well to Rob Wright and James O'Toole from me, Adrian Eames. Until the next time. Bye-bye.